Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
All right, and we're back with Boots, Balls, and Bras podcast. And today we have a very awesome guest, Lucy Staniforth. Thank you for joining us.
Hey.
And your move from United to Villa has stirred some waves, and we were chatting about you last week. So Farah thought, hey, why don't we just get you on and have you chat with us about all the fun topics? So thanks for joining us. First of all, like, how is Villa? And why did you move? What was the motivation?
Well, I think it was quite obvious, really. I wasn't getting a lot of playing time at United. I think, you know, at the beginning of the season, I'd signed a contract extension with them, hoping to get more minutes on the pitch, and it just sort of transpired that I didn't. So I think the club were good in the sense that they understood what I wanted. And yeah, life at Villa's good. I can't complain.
Lewis, what about when you was at Birmingham? You settled really well there. The city, like, you literally probably had arguably your best seasons there as a footballer. So you're back close to Birmingham, not just down the road. Are you hoping for the same sort of performances on the pitch and getting back to that level that you're playing at more consistently with Villa?
Yeah. I think like any footballer, obviously when you're playing consistently, that's when you can kind of get into your rhythm and show what you're about. I think obviously the time at United, I was in and out, and it's just so hard to get that momentum and even just the rhythm of playing the same position all the time. I was playing multiple positions in that team, so it's difficult. So, yeah, obviously when you have a bit more of a steady idea of what's expected of you and what you need to bring to the table, yeah, I'm hoping, well, so far so good. I've been really happy with how I've played and stuff, so can't complain.
Going on that then, Lou, so what's your preferred position as a midfielder? Obviously, you're a midfielder, right? But obviously, there's multiple positions that you can play. What would you say is your strongest position in midfield where you get the very best of Lucy Staniforth?
I think it's a hard one because I'm not sure myself. But I think my best attributes are when I'm facing forward. So, you know, if that is playing deeper, I do think that suits me a bit better. Obviously, there's bits to that game that I probably need to, you know, sharpen up on or learn. But I think where I'm playing right now at Villa, I'm really enjoying it. Obviously, the team plays football as well, so that really suits me.
You look right now, too. You guys are in sixth place out of 12. And, I mean, it's not shocking that you're already at sixth place, but just in terms of, like, where you had expected them to be now and where you think they might end up at the end of the season. Do you think that you guys can, you know, get top five, top four, or do you think that six is pretty generous given the, you know, how they've had their run, or what do you see?
It's funny because from going in the building and playing with the team, me and Jordan were like, I actually thought we'd be higher. And the way that the girls are and like the way that the team plays, they play with the fearlessness of a team that's, you know, aspiring to break down those places between us and top five, top four. I think that, I don't know, it's just so hard because right now, obviously, everything's great. I don't really know like how the team sort of reacts to adversity and stuff, but I would say that the squad and the players that are there are good enough to push for sure. Like when you look at the teams in and around us, you've got Everton and West Ham. I would pit us above them, especially, you know, we've got a solid back line, but we've got, you know, probably the most informed striker, bar Bonnie Shaw at the minute. I'd always say we've got a chance in games, so we've got a really nice run of fixtures coming up, so that's really exciting too.
Yeah, Rachel Daly is not a bad striker. We've been chatting about her. Is she a defender? Is she a striker? I think she's going to get some minutes as a striker, but we did discuss that last week. What were you going to say?
You know what? Sorry, just as Beck says that, Luce, just on that, right? And I know you might want to answer it, but obviously you've played international football, right? So you know the levels between international and club football. Do you think, given the fact that Rachel's playing so well at WSL and obviously did when she was in NWSL and scoring goals, do you think she should be given a chance as a number nine in the Lionesses, or do you think actually she's more comfortable as a fullback in the international setup? You don't have to answer, but I would be interested to see.
Yeah, I do, but answer for us.
So
I think what she's doing right now, she deserves a chance. But to obviously play devil's advocate, I am a huge admirer of Alessia, and I think that at the minute, I would say that that's her like shirt to lose. But I 100% believe Rach deserves a chance. I think she has like really good traits of a centre forward, you know, always peeling on the back shoulder. She's always available. It's something that I like to play with. When I look up, I can see that she's ready for the ball to come in. She's not, you know, on her heels reacting to whatever comes around her. I think that she's got so much to offer in that position. I guess I think it's funny when you're versatile, it's a really frustrating thing. You end up playing a lot, but you can never like hold down one position.
That was a bit like with you though, Luce. You played out on the wing, you played as an 8 or 10. So you're right, when you're versatile, like how difficult is it to then go, this is my main attribute and I actually want to stick it out and try and fight for that position?
Yeah, it's so hard because Rach, at the end of the day, Rach's just a good footballer. She's an intelligent player, isn't she? So she can do a job in multiple positions. And I found it frustrating in my career being someone that's like, oh, well, so-and-so's injured, Lucy can just play on the wing. Or, you know, we need someone in a deeper position. Let's just put Lucy there. And it's so hard to, like, just pick up a position and do exactly what that position requires. And then maybe the next game, say you've had a good game in that position, but then the next game you're shipped off to a different position and you're like, it's a completely different game, especially when you're playing out wide to them playing centrally. So I feel for Rach in that sense because she is in red hot form.
I think just to add to that, like we said last week about the England sort of setup and Russo being so good up front, and we're saying in terms of like having Daly there, if needed, is a great attribute. But I think there's enough in terms of the squad without having to put her in that position. But like you said, Lucy, I think again, it's down to her if she actually wants to even go into that position. But I think as a country, it's great to have someone who's so good as a backup. It kind of reminds me of myself as a goalkeeper.
Or a referee.
question, Luce. So we talked about Villa and obviously how well they're doing or obviously how they might be aspirational in terms of pushing on. How much of that is down to the manager? How much of that is down to, I guess, what she instills in the squad and what you guys want to do going forward?
Yeah, I think a lot of credit has to go to Carla. I think she's really surprised me since I've come in. She's fearless. Like I keep thinking, like, is it a good thing or a bad thing that she's so fearless? Because, you know, she's willing to trust people, take risks. Obviously, the young players play in loads, which you don't necessarily always see. So, like, I love that about her. And I think that you can see it in the way the team play. You know, they played Arsenal the other day and I watched it. And me and Farrah were speaking about Laura Brown. She's playing out from the back and going from one centre-back to the other by passing the ball across the box. I thought she was going to get an assist for Arsenal, but it just shows, you know, like trusting the process and instilling that in the players. And I think I can't speak highly enough of her. I think that she's definitely really surprised me. I knew she was good with people, but in terms of, you know, what she can give going into a game, it's quite rare, I think, what she's got.
Is she fearless because she knows what it is to be at like rock bottom in terms of like being with Blues and helping them stay up? Is she kind of like, I know what it's like to be right down there and actually I can kind of judge because I've got that sort of lived experience as a manager, or just she's just great?
Yeah, I think that maybe because she was a more attacking player, maybe that's something that's, you know, part of her football DNA. You know, she's willing to take risks and she's, Yeah, just like more focused on what you can get out of the game rather than what could hurt you in the game. Obviously, she's not stupid, but I think that, I really like that about her. It's really refreshing to work with someone that's looking at what we can gain rather than, you know, potentially where you could get hurt in a game.
Luce, so last week we spoke on the podcast, obviously, about the game, the transfer window, and about bringing more foreign players on will obviously mean less opportunity for young players. And just spoke there, is it Blinkeld Brown? Like, I admire her as a young player. I think she's got huge potential to be probably one of the next ones to come through the England under-23s into the seniors. With the signings of yourself and Jordan and obviously Dali in the summer, how do you see her playing time then? You say Carl is brave. Do you see her trying to find a way to fit her in, or do you see her being the easy option to be left out? And maybe you can't answer that, but in terms of her potential, I think she's got unbelievable potential.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with you. I think she's been so lucky this like first part of the season to have played so much. Obviously, it does give Carla a bit more of a headache with having the club's got quite a few midfielders, actually. So it's probably quite a difficult decision for her at times. But look, she's been playing on like the right-hand side as well. And I know we just spoke about being versatile, but obviously it's really, I think it's so good when young players get different experiences in different positions. But I think she'll definitely get minutes. She'll play a part for sure. She's a fit girl. She's, you know, busy. She's always willing to listen. And I think that, yeah, she's in a good place.
Can I bring it back to you, Luce? Because we talked about the transfer window in our last podcast, and you know, you have been part of Lionesses squad, and a lot of us think that you should be back in the Lionesses squad. A lot of fans do as well. Was that one of the reasons why you wanted to transfer to Aston Villa? And what do you think, you know, what are your goals? Are you looking to get back in? Do you want to see some time?
Yeah, I mean, I think I've always felt like when I've gone away with England that I've not maybe, you know, had a fair crack at the whip. I think I've played little games here and there, mostly friendlies. So I would love to put myself in a position where that's a real conversation, not just getting picked, but, you know, can I contribute in any certain way? It wasn't necessarily in my thinking. I just wanted to play. I think I felt like you get to a certain point in your career where you can feel the clock's ticking and you're like, yeah. I just need to play. It didn't matter where it was or who it was with. I mean, luckily, Villa is the perfect fit for me at the moment. So, yeah, I think I'm not going to think too much about it, but if it happens, then brilliant.
That's fab.
And just touching on that, and I think just linking to that, Bex, I guess my question is, how are you? Because a lot of the time we just talk about football and we keep going and just take the next game after the next. And I know, obviously, you've been married quite recently. You've moved to...
Oh, yay!
Congratulations!
Thank you.
We don't always focus on, like, the well-being of a player. And I think that's the nice thing around women's football is kind of getting to know the person. And, yeah, I just wanted to know, like, how is Lucy?
Yeah, I'm really good, thank you. I think it's hard when you play football. I don't know if you guys were very similar, but I take a lot of my happiness from being on the pitch and playing, and you know, that's where a lot of my happiness comes from in life. And obviously, Laura, she'll kill me for that.
She's a regular listener, so I'm glad you got that in, because I don't want to
start off. She is a big listener, yeah. She's probably a big fan.
Getting good feedback.
So, yeah, I think, like, the last year has been really difficult on the pitch. I think I found it really frustrating. Obviously, it's quite... Yeah, it's hard to keep your motivational levels, your standards, everything day in, day out when, yeah, you're not playing that much. But at the moment, I'm really good. I can say from the 22nd of December 2022, life's got very good.
So nice to hear. So nice to hear.
Was that date planned for that reason?
No, but I love the number two. And it's funny how things work out. I was so buzzing when I like could write the date out, and I'm like, it just looks such an aesthetic date.
Luce, we're moving up. We're going to be in our second half. We'll be talking about, like, obviously the drop off of female coaches and stuff within the game. So obviously you've worked under male and female coaches, just coming from a male coach at Manchester United, and now you're with a female at Aston Villa. Do you have like a preference, or do you see like huge differences in female coaches to male coaches within our game?
Yeah, I was thinking a lot about this earlier, and I feel like it's a hard question to answer because you can only go on the experiences that you have as a player. And from my experiences as a player, I think that the female managers that I've worked with, and I don't know if this just comes from, you know, society and the way women are, but I think that women are a lot, they have a much smaller ego. It's less about them and it's more about the team. I think that in terms of understanding female players, I've always had better relationships with female managers. For me, it's never about, you know, the tactical, technical side. I think that always sort of takes care of itself. I think the most important thing is how they treat you as a person and just relate to you and stuff. So for me, I think that from my experiences, women have always proven to be a manager or a person that I would prefer to work with.
That's so interesting. Like, because we've obviously seen a big drop off, is what we were discussing in our podcast last week, of female coaches, and we've just seen Arsenal's assistant coach as well resign, female coach. And is that an issue, do you think? Do you think that we need to be seeing more female coaches coming through? Do you think that there's something we should be doing different in the game? Or do you think, you know, that's fine? Obviously not, because you prefer the female ones, but
I think like it's a shame that, you know, maybe the opportunities aren't there, or people are not getting the time that they want or the support that they need to, you know, carry out those roles. I think it'll be really interesting in this sort of next era of players that are playing that would potentially come in towards the end of the career, because I think that there's probably a lot of people that sit within that bracket that have got a lot to offer. I guess you look at maybe a slightly odd, but someone like Joe Potter, I've heard really good things about her at Birmingham. And, you know, I think that it's important that people, it's that cliche of if you can see it, you can be it. And if you see someone like Joe, who's a former player, now assistant coach at Birmingham, you know, in that position, then I hope that it gives a lot of people, you know, that opportunity and desire to be in those positions. Because I think that there's so much you can take from your playing career into those kind of roles. And I think it's a shame that if it gets wasted.
Would you ever be a manager?
No.
That was another question I was going to ask. Do you reckon you have to, or are managers better if they've been a former player? When we spoke to Bibi, she said about refereeing, that they kind of understand the game a little bit better. Do you reckon that it's a natural transition from a player going across to management? Or could you just be just someone who's really interested in the game and could still be a great manager? I haven't seen any examples of just people just rocking up to the game and being managers. But do you reckon that's a caveat in terms of if you have to have that sort of interest from playing?
I feel like in my opinion, it would really help. I think that in the last 2-3 years, I've learned so much as a player that, you know, it would only give you a much bigger advantage and stuff going into management. I think that to understand how it feels to be a player, to do certain things, you know, setbacks, adversity, good times, I think that when you have that lived experience, it's almost priceless. And I think that obviously, you know, I wouldn't say that nobody could be a manager if they've not played, but I think that for the women's game especially, I do think that it's almost like a niche bubble. And if people have lived that experience and almost, you know, understand, yeah, the issues that people might face and stuff, I think that it does help.
Luke, you know, even like your end of your career, and even the younger players coming through, do you think that we need better technically skilled coaches in order to help develop the next generation of players coming through? Even yourself, you're at an age where you can still learn and develop. Do you think there's enough skilled coaches in the women's game currently that are helping to progress that?
To answer your question, I don't know, it's hard because you can't generalise. I don't know what other clubs have on offer. I do think that it's maybe an area that could see a bit more detail given to it, for sure. I remember obviously when you were at Reading, you were waxing lyrical about how much you were learning, and yeah, I think that you obviously, you're never too old to learn, and if someone came to me and was like, let's sit down, we're going to work on this, I think you can, you know, really excel here, I'd be buzzing. So I think that yeah, maybe I don't know.
For example, Archie Luce, say for example Mark Skinner or Carla Ward, right, when you was at either of those teams, for example, if you asked for like extra technical detailed sessions at the end of your session, do you get it from either of those coaches, or is there somebody employed within the clubs to then go, this is our technical coach, because we ain't got enough time in terms of like team coaching to be able to do that to individuals, but in order for you to develop within that squad, there's somebody there or not?
I think from my experiences, there's never a specific technical coach. I think that's probably where women's football maybe falls short in terms of like resources and funding for, or they may not see the value in having a specific technical coach. It would probably fall under like the remit of the assistant manager or another coach within the group. But I think that, yeah, I think it's so valuable, especially the younger players coming through, because they don't train enough when they're younger and stuff. I don't think that to get exposure to the levels that they're required when they come to the first team. So you'd like to think that may be something in the future. That's where sort of football's going, where you get more specialist coaches in specific areas, like finishing coaches, stuff like that.
It's funny you say that, because I saw, watching the City game yesterday, they were interviewing Khadija Shaw after the game, and she was saying that she was been working with Sean Gota doing some one-to-one like stuff off, like during training. And she's basically saying that. Yeah, that's what the manager was saying.
She's on fire this year. Like, literally, some of the stuff she does this year, you didn't see last year. And maybe you put that down to her not getting regular games, obviously, with Ellen White being there. But if she's had that and then consistency that comes with that, mate, she's on fire this year. She's probably, arguably, up there with Rage. But in terms of the best all-round striker at the minute in the league, you'd have to put her up there. I'm just saying, it just goes to show when you do have the expertise or somebody that's kind of had those experiences, and even if it's not so much a detail, but can also help those type of things, how much a player, especially in the women's game, can improve, because we are, as we spoke last week on the pod, we're on a journey to professionalism. We're nowhere near professional. We have that tag and that label because our game, we're getting paid to do it full time. Mm-hmm. But in terms of being there, we're nowhere near there. So in terms of those small steps, I think they're so important in order to grow the game and make the game a better product.
Definitely. If anyone wants a slide tackling coach, I'm available. My DMs are open.
/ WWF tackling wrestler.
Lucy, wait there, Bex. Before we let Lucy go, because Lucy took loads of your time, right? I've seen an article today, Henry Winter. Is it Winter? Is that his name? Henry Winter. With Hope Powell. And they asked her about the England coach. Should they be English or not? What's your thoughts? If you don't have to give one, but I'm just going to put it out there, because the England coach should be English. Even though Serena has done massive things with the England Lionesses.
Wait, so Hope said that they should be English?
Yeah, in an article today, I just read it. So it's just an interesting one. You don't have to answer, but what's your thoughts?
You've got to pick your battles, haven't you?
Don't pick it yet. Wait until you become English and get back to the squad. And we'll come back to you.
I think if you asked any England fan, though, would they trade the Euros for an English coach, the answer would be no. So, obviously...
answer.
Nice.
I think what Serena's done with that team is brilliant. So it's proof in the pudding, isn't it?
I've got one more tiny question for you. Well, we do. What bit of advice would you give for yourself to your younger self or to young girls now? Can we quick?
The advice the thing that's coming to mind with me at the moment for myself is I had the opportunity to go and play in America when I was younger, where Lucy went at UNC. I would have said, go there. That would be my advice to myself. I was so quick to jump at the opportunity of playing in the Women's Super League at that moment that I feel like I missed a trick with that one. But to younger girls, like the thing that I always loved to do when I was younger, me and Lucy would just spend hours and hours and hours passing the ball back to each other, kick-ups. You know, we'd make videos, stupid videos, and I'm so glad no one will ever find these videos ever again. But I think, like, just falling in love with the game and finding a friend that, you know, you can just practice on hours with. I think that's the thing, that those are my fondest memories from growing up.
Oh, that's so sweet.
So obviously, like, women's footballers, I think we're a little bit different to men in terms of society, and always, obviously, it's only just become professional quite recently. Like, have you had any sort of ideas of anything that you goals you want to do off the pitch once you sort of finish playing? Because I know it might not be football related, it might just be like an actor you wanted to be when you were younger or something.
So really. is this my aspirations for post-career?
Post-career.
Okay. Well, obviously, I told you I didn't want to be a manager, but I think my ultimate dream at the moment is probably to be head of women's football at Newcastle United. I'm being very specific here.
Wow.
Why there?
They've got an amazing women's setup as well, and they had a fantastic FA Cup run last year as well. So, yeah, that would be a good job.
Can I ask why? Why there?
I'm a huge Newcastle fan. I think if the opportunity ever arises in the future to play for them, I'll be jumping at the chance. But I think I did my master's in sporting directorship, so I think that really lends itself to having an overseeing role. You know, that's pretty much what I aspire to be. I think that it'd be so cool. And then you don't have to deal with media and stuff like that. You can just sit back and let the manager take the stick.
Lucy, well, we're at Newcastle Ladies, and hopefully they listen and then maybe get a contract in a couple of years.
You know what? It's so funny. I've been saying to so many people, I really want to do this. And then so many people text me like, when you're at Newcastle, can you hire me as this? Or when you're at Newcastle, like, can you sign me as a player? I'm like, I've not got the job yet, but.
Getting in early.
Hire me as a manager then and give me a good salary.
Yeah, yeah. You can be technical coach.
We know a good technical coach.
You're the technical coach.
Yeah, I'd be a good one as well, but you just need to pay properly.
You're expensive, aren't you?
Compared to the players that I'm trying to improve.
So good. Luce, I mean, we want to keep you here for more hours. Obviously, we've already gone over time. So thank you so much for your time. We really appreciate it. And seriously, all the best at Aston Villa. We'll all be watching and cheering for you. I think you've converted at least one of us in this group into an Aston Villa fan after this conversation. So I'll be watching more Aston Villa games. Yeah. But no, thanks a lot for your time, and all the best, buddy.
Thanks for having me. It's nice to speak to you.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. Hello Fresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. Hello Fresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
All right, so that was an awesome first half with Lucy Staniforth, who's just moved to Aston Villa. And heading into our halftime team talk, we're going to talk about the FA Cup fourth round happened just recently. Some of those results are not very surprising, to be honest. Tottenham beat London City 5-0. Man City, very impressive win over Sheffield United, 7-0. Man United just scraped by Sunderland, 2-1. Chelsea 3-1 against Liverpool, West Ham, Wolverhampton 2-0. Arsenal smashed Leeds Ladies 9-0. Cardiff City, Burnley was 4-1. And Reading, an interesting one for you, Farah. 2-2 with Leicester City at the end of the game, and then one in penalty shootouts. Aston Villa, Lucy Staniforth's team, beating Fylde 11-0. That was the biggest score line. So there are a few other games, but those are sort of the biggest ones that we saw. Thoughts on the FA Cup fourth round, guys?
I love the FA Cup. I think it's, you know, for me, it's the one cup as a kid. And if you're from England, you'll understand, but it's the one cup as a kid that you dream of getting to Wembley. Like, and I know in this, certainly in a women's game, as a kid for myself growing up, was never possible because obviously they didn't play it there. But that dream actually did come true when I got to the final and won it at Wembley with Arsenal. So, I mean, the fact that it's at Wembley now, I just think that cup in itself, the history within that cup, is the longest serving cup in league history, and that's across the world. So yeah, it's a famous cup that everybody in England dreams of being a part. And I just think, look, I understand that the results are crazy, right? And the women's games progress massively now. So when you see the likes of Arsenal beating Leeds 9-0, for example, that just shows how far the top end of the game's come. But you've seen after the game and the likes of Jennifer Beattie and Leah Williamson, and they're all swapping shirts, and it means so much to these, you know, younger players or players that are never going to make it to the top level and who idolise, you know, our Lionesses or the Scottish internationals or these international players, to just have the opportunity to step on the pitch with them. And it's the same with the men. It's no different in our game to the men's game when, you know, lower league teams get to play against, you know, role models, idols, and just be on the same pitch. So I just think for that reason, you know, the famous FA Cup is just, yeah, the best to be a part of. I don't know what your thoughts are being English and the FA Cup being the history behind it.
100%. And don't forget, we played FA Cup in the streets. Like, a real competition.
Knockouts, yeah.
Literally, knockouts. You play, like, winner stays on, FA Cup, and we were celebrating. You know, you slide on the grass there. Now, you do that on the concrete, right? In the road. Like, we just won the cup, but it means so much to actually see that transition from playing in the streets. Mm. And I live quite close to Wembley, so I've always seen the old Wembley, the new Wembley Arch, and to see that actually now there's an opportunity to play at the home of football. Mm. Like, it's you can't even think of it. Like, I actually thought about playing for Man United more than playing at Wembley, which is an even more unrealistic thing. So, yeah, I've been quite lucky enough to, again, like Farah, be involved in the FA Cup, and remember winning it with Charlton. And we'd been lost several times and got battered by Arsenal. And finally, when we won, it was literally like, yeah, it's such a memorable moment, but it kind of gets you hungry to want to do it again. And there could be so many different upsets. I actually remember we played Aston Villa one year for Charlton and we were well favourites. And I remember Keith saying, like, this could be your banana skin. Like, do not lose, like, to this team. We lost 1-0. Absolutely gutted. But again, that's what it's about. Like, anyone can be pitted up against anyone across the league. And I saw, like, hashtag United, which is like a new team. They got through to the fourth round. And that's like just a group of girls that's, I think, like, social influencers have kind of come together and made up a team. And now they're playing in the fourth round of the FA Cup. Like, it's crazy. But yeah, it's great to see, like Farah said, like, other young players who see that, like, the Lionesses, who see the other internationals, and get that chance to play against them. It's a memorable moment on and off the pitch, something they'll remember for a lifetime. And I guess when we're looking at participation, it gives that aspirations for maybe other schoolgirls or just community playing football girls. Actually, I could play for a normal team, not necessarily a top team, and still have the chance of playing against some of my idols. So, yeah.
That's amazing. The part I like the best, Earth. I think, like, you know, not having grown up here and been a part of lots of different other leagues, I think the FA Cup has a really special tinge to it, because you have this sort of underdog that can always upset, you know, the Man United. So it doesn't matter what club I'm playing for, hashtag United, which you said is such an interesting club, being able to play against Coventry, it was this round. But yeah, so interesting. So what, just quickly, what year did you win the FA Cup, Earth?
When did we win?
Was it 2005? You know what, Bex, my first four FA Cup, I got to the FA Cup like 4 years on the run and lost all four.
What years were those, Farah?
I can't remember, but Eartha beat me in one of them. That's why she couldn't.
But there you go. There you've had it from two FA Cup winners themselves. And now heading into our second half, which is talking all about managers. This one's an interesting topic. We brought it up last week, but male versus female, heading into that next. So into our second half, talking about managers, specifically in England, in this league, in the Barclays WSL, We now currently have only 4 female WSL managers. If you can name them, you get 10 points. We might do it at the end. Okay, we'll give it to you. It's Chelsea, Aston Villa, Reading, and Tottenham Spurs. Now, that must be an issue. I mean, 4 out of 12 teams, but they seem to be leaking as well. We've just seen Arsenal's assistant coach leave this week. Thoughts on this, guys? Is it a problem for the game here in England?
I mean, it is, because obviously you want to see more female coaches where possible, if they're good enough. Let me add that, because I don't think it's about gender. I think it's about whether they can deliver the quality that's needed within the women's game in order to progress the women's game. So I don't think it's so much about gender, but we have fantastic female coaches out there. We certainly have some retired players that I believe that would have gone on to do a fantastic job within coaching and certainly help the next generation. I myself wanted to be a part of coaching, but I just feel like there's so many barriers when you come out of the game, or opportunities in terms of actually real life coaching at the top level in order to help you progress, develop, and stay motivated to want to do that. And that's a difficult thing. But for me, I would like to see obviously more females in the game, but you have to be the right female.
What kind of challenges?
It's a pressure game now, right? So it's a professional game. So in terms of results, it's a results-based game, and managers are, you know, you can keep or lose a job depending on where your team are. I know when I was at Reading, in terms of opportunities to actually be on the grass and actually deliver sessions, it just wasn't there. So I was involved on, and, you know, great opportunity for me to actually be involved on the coaching team. And great to watch and learn off, you know, certainly some of the coaches that are highly respected, I think, are so important in our game in terms of our development of the game. But in terms of them being able to do the bigger picture stuff, so the smaller stuff is, you know, pretty easy. And I used to do that at with the younger team, so the smaller type sessions, functional type sessions. Mm. I'm not saying they're easier to deliver, but easier to give me an opportunity to deliver. When it comes to the bigger picture stuff and actually doing the more team-based structured stuff.
The fun stuff.
It's not so much fun. It's more detailed. It's more like...
That's what you want to be involved in, right? Yeah, right. Yeah,
that's where you make your errors. That's where you learn. You get it right and wrong in those bigger pictures, and you see things differently. You know, how do you want your team to set up with a high press and mid and low, whatever it might be, or how do you want them to progress up the pitch in terms of your possession? Do you want it to be a direct? Do you want it to be possession based? You know, percentage based. So in terms of those opportunities and actually being able to get out there with higher end level of female players, because let's be honest, it's really the WSL one that brings the high quality. Championship is really catching. I would agree. I haven't seen London City Lionesses play Tottenham in terms of the gap is closing for sure, but in terms of getting those opportunities with top end players, you don't really get that. And then obviously then when you drop down the pyramid, it's really difficult to get your coaching use point across, because then the level and capability of the players is a massive drop off. So that's what I mean in terms of opportunity, but also in terms of opportunity, financial opportunity, like financially to get your badges, you know, it's so expensive to go and do your B license, your A license, that financially that is off-putting. And then the support around, you know, players that are coming out of the game in terms of helping fund that. And I mean, I was lucky that the FA finally helped to fund my A license. So I was quite lucky. I was going to go with the Welsh FA, and I started that with them. And obviously, would have looked good on the FA for me to have, you know, gone and done it with a Welsh FA. So I was lucky and fortunate, but not everybody gets that same opportunity to then be helped with that funding. And I think certainly the funding around the courses is far too expensive. And also I think that the courses, in terms of the delivery of the courses, I think, I don't know how, you obviously haven't been on the recent one, but they're so dominated towards or biased towards the men's game. And I've said it throughout my playing career, and I continue to say it, the games are different, and we have to accept that as females in terms of capabilities compared to male capabilities are so different on an 11v11 pitch. So therefore your coaching style and what and how you can deliver something will be slightly different and tapered to what the capabilities or physical capabilities or technical capabilities of the female game. And they're so biased towards how the men's game is played that it's quite difficult for a female coach, because I used to have those debates on the A license around, well, actually, when you're coaching a female team, in terms of, for example, let me give you an example, the distances in terms of what females can cover to men and how you can overcover or undercover, whatever, is totally different. And I think that there has to be a course more directed towards the women's game. But I mean, I think you did your coaching badge years ago. So, I mean, I don't know what your thoughts are on in terms of the coaching badges back then and your learnings from it or your views on it from then. But they're my current views on the badges.
I think from my point of view and talking about it from when I done my badges, I purely done it from an educational standpoint, not necessarily because I wanted to be a manager, but just I wanted to continue learning. And I knew obviously how it would help in terms of understanding the game. I think you touched on a key point, though, Farah, in terms of you even talked about your access to even getting on a course. And this is my question around, does it matter who you are or what league you play for or what profile you have as a player to how accessible it is to get on those coaching badges or to be supported? So when we're looking at how many are coming through the pipeline, actually how many are getting the opportunity and the real support in order to really progress through those ranks onto a course and to be successful at it? Because I think...
But you're saying that it's even harder now, because I know years ago you used to be able to go through your county FA and get onto courses. Yeah. That was, from my awareness of it, because the amount of messages I get in my inbox, how can you help me get on a course? I think that's changed. I think the process around being able to get on courses, whether that be level 2, 1, the B, which is level 3, the B license, A license, it's changed. So in terms of the access and being able to even access a course,
I think there is accessibility, and I think there's even only female only courses that they're putting on. I think the point I'm trying to make is where we're looking at where they're progressing into top management jobs. I think there's a specific type of player or ex-player that they're looking in terms of that role in coming through to manage a team. Similarly to where you're looking at where the men are transitioning and they're quite high profile and they're transferring to the women's game and clubs are picking them up because they'll get players because of the men's profile. I think it's a similar thing in terms of the women, where we're not seeing them transition into those higher roles in WSL or Championship or higher up the National League in terms of the pyramid, because realistically, am I really going to get a job? There's 12 jobs in the WS. There's only 12 places. Like, so we can do all this coaching and those coming through the pipeline, but are they realistically getting the support and the opportunity to coach and get better? Like you said, you was at Reading. How many opportunities did you get to, like, lead from the front? None. You might be technically, on paper, part of that role, but how are you really being given the chance to be stretched and challenged and to deal with different scenarios? You're not. And I think women are a lot more kind of clued on in terms of, I'm not going to invest my time in something that I'm not realistically going to get a fair pop at progressing it.
And I think it's not easy. It's not easy. I get it, because it's not easy for a club to go, you know, you're ready made. We're not ready made. So unless you've been doing it whilst playing, we're not ready made coaches. We're not ready made managers. Some are very lucky, you know, that they do it. You know, for me, for example, when I was playing, I played till the very end of my career. So I wasn't one of those players that faded out through being a substitute. So you can kind of start to think about something else.
Mm-hmm.
I finished my career as a starter. That makes sense? So I didn't have, my thoughts weren't, okay, you know what? I'm not a starter, but I still want to be involved in the game. Let me concentrate on coaching in my last couple of years as a player. That wasn't an option for me. I started until the end. So in terms of, there's some players that maybe, you know, have other ideas or start to think what next after playing. I wasn't even on that path. I knew I always wanted to be involved within the game, coaching, because I have a passion for that. In terms of my skill set and know-how straight away and how to, you know, graphically or the geography around how to set up the pitch and the distances, etc. I didn't have a clue. I'd been involved in them, but it's different when you're on the other side. And that support and help around that and exposure to that is just not there. It's just not there within a women's game. And you think about, I can name so many. You've got like Kelly Smith, you've got Rachel Yankee, you've got Laura Bassett. There's so many. I mean, Joe Potter's now coaching, but there's so many players, good players, that I believe could have a huge impact in the women's game that just haven't had that support to be able to then maybe step into that area or department or whatever within the women's game. I feel like these players are so key to helping develop the women's game.
It's that financial piece. I don't think there's any... The financial support structure is just not there for females to realistically say, this is my hopes, this is my aspirations, and I'm going to pursue that career. I'm going to go and do my continued professional development. I'm going to go and watch players. I'm going to go and learn. It just doesn't happen. Unless you're a top female player, like you said, like Farah in the women's game, potentially.
Even if you are,
I couldn't live off of it. It's impossible. So financially, there's a massive restriction there in terms of how players then can go, even if you go in as an assistant or a first coach or something like that. Financially, what you are paid to do and the hours you're expected to give is nowhere near a level of being able to live off.
Is this the investment piece where we're talking about where the game's growing, but we need to put more money in developing coaches, refereeing becoming more professional? All these foundational pieces where we're looking for, I guess we won't really see the outcomes in the next sort of 5-10 years, but unless we start planting those seeds now, we're going to be talking about this again.
Well, that's one of the areas that I find so interesting, because, you know, you talk about these top players at Eartha. It's interesting to hear you say they're looking for a specific type of female player to coach. And then you look at someone like Casey Stoney, who's pretty much been, correct me if I'm wrong, but pretty much the only former female footballer from England that has now coached at the WSL level successfully. I mean, Hope Powell did, but she, you know, back when she was playing, it was sort of a different era. Again, correct me if I'm wrong, but she's decided to leave, you know, so she even got up to the top and she decided to leave. And looking at where I played in Germany, I still think that they have the best structure for getting female footballers as players into the coaching. And that was done by Tina Turnemeyer. I don't know if you remember her still, Farah, but she was the women's coach of the German national team for ages. And what she did is she installed within the league the gaps in the league season where the players could then go and do coaching degrees. So literally they'd have, you know, a 10-day window in the FIFA window, but they'd have one of those days where they'd do a coaching degree. So basically, as a player, you came through the national team from 17, 20, 23s they had at that time, and the senior team, and you just got your badges as you were playing. And that was all funded by the DFB. And for me, that, you know, no surprise that Inka Grinks is still coaching. Steffi Jones ended up being the national team coach at one point. She was a center back for Germany. So there are a lot of examples of, you know, really good players. I don't know if they still do that because I don't see as many female, you know, players transitioning to coaching. But that's exactly what I think we're looking for. It's just a structure that has to be funded by the federation, because clearly it's an issue.
But that makes sense as to why they were so far advanced to every other nation, because not only, even if they don't choose to go on and be a coach or a manager, in terms of what you said, if you did it for your understanding of the game, how much more advanced does that make you as a player when you understand the game and you understand coaching and all of these types of things? No wonder they, I mean, I never knew that, but no wonder they were so far ahead of the game when they were. And when we played them, we could never bloody beat them.
Yeah, because they could read. They could read on the pitch what you were doing because they knew all the distances, Farah.
it makes perfect sense how adaptable and how good and as you say, it was that extra 1% that will make them even better.
You
mentioned Casey Stoney there, Bex.
Yes.
And to be honest, I remember when we was at Charlton, so Casey done her badges, I done my badges, Karen Hill's done her badges, and again, she managed in the WSL. So actually, the two former players in Karen Hill's and Casey Stoney done their badges as well whilst we were playing. And yeah. I think it was back then, it was almost like an additional pull in terms of we wasn't professional. Actually, this was another opportunity, a way to earn a wage and earn a salary. So get your badges, do some coaching as well as playing in the league. And actually, I think they actually kind of became passionate about it and wanted to continue that professional development. And that's what we were talking about in terms of when I was saying to Lucy, I think female players, because professionalism was quite new, they always had something else that they wanted to do in terms of a career. But I think where we talk about Casey and how she's left England and gone across to America, I think we can't like not consider the well-being piece, like the work-life balance, like all the other bits that you get.
The financial money.
In terms of like being in the US, you look at even houses and spaces like for her family, like it's that way of life. So what is that bigger package? It's not just about managing.
You see that? You see exactly what you're saying there?
Yeah.
And our solution to improving our game is to go and jump from one to a million by going, let's get VAR. We haven't even got professional refs. So let's get Undersoul Heating. We haven't even got our own stadiums. So my point is that when you're talking there, how can we develop coaches? How about that millions of pounds that you're potentially thinking about putting VAR in the game, right? When we're not even there yet. Let's employ professional referees, full-time referees. You know this undersaw heating? Let's invest in coaches and their well-being and how you can cater for their families so they're comfortable, whatever else it might be, in order to get the best coaches coming through to further develop our game. So then later down the line, we might not even need VAR. Do you know what I mean? Or but these are the things we just jump from zero to whatever and think that the solution to our game looking as a better product is to get VAR or is to get under-screening. When we haven't even got the best coaches and we let what potentially we think could be the next best coaches within the game just go.
And that's an issue, isn't it? It's not only we're not collecting and training and getting the best English coaches in the WSL. We're nowhere near attracting foreign coaches to this league. All right, so that wraps up our second half of managers, male versus female, what's going on in England. And of course, we can talk about that for days, which I'm sure it will come up again. But now we have a little bit of a treat for you guys. It's called Extra Time. And this is basically your BBB fan questions. So we've had a bunch of really awesome questions. It was really hard for us. We went back and forth trying to pick two because we only have time for two. But we got one from Chloe. Do you think the WSL should expand the number of teams? Eartha, go.
100%. I think as the franchise or the league grows, we definitely need the competition as we're developing more young players coming through who need game time. It will be great to see, I guess, them participating and learning and being stretched and challenged. I just don't know which teams it's going to be. I think, are they trying to get it identical to the Premier League? I don't know who's going to come in. Like, how does it, we're going to have more people be promoted from the Championship? But yeah, I think there's definitely a space for more teams and more games. And I think the fans want to travel to more games. So obviously, let's bring it in.
And Farah, you've already touched on this. I know you have an opinion about it, but what do you think?
No, I think the game needs, we need to grow the game. I think we need at least a couple more teams within the league. I certainly think it just makes it more competitive down the bottom end of the table as opposed to the top end just, you know, moving away from everybody else. I just think it makes the whole league a little bit more competitive all year round. And also opportunities, as we mentioned, for some younger players to maybe get some minutes within the WSL and compete at the highest level. So I'm all for growing the league and certainly growing teams within that.
Yeah, my opinion on that one is I don't think that we need to grow the league now. I think we need to get the foundations right, but I definitely think that in the future it will be expanded and something like 16 teams I think feels about right. But still, when you see some of the blowouts that we're getting, and even if you had two separate groups, that would sort of separate the league too much, I think, into two serious groups. So I don't think we're ready right now. I think we need to get the foundations right, but it's inevitable that it will happen. So that's my thoughts on that one. All right. And then over to our second question from Hannah. Thank you, Hannah, for sending it in. Is the Spanish league competitive enough for Barca's 50 consecutive wins to really mean something? So for those of you that missed it, Barcelona women's team, FC Barcelona Femenini, got 50 consecutive wins. That's from last season and this season. And FIFA has said it is a record for any club team, male or female. Guys, thoughts on this?
You know what, right? We're going to, like, you always hear people say, oh, the Spanish league isn't competitive enough. The German league isn't competitive enough. The French league isn't competitive enough. But you know what? These teams beat the top teams in our league. So for me, they are competitive enough. And I think the way their foundations, you talk about the youth development within those leagues. You spoke about the German, you know, how the Germans structured their youth setups. When you play against, and we did it at Reading, we played against some of the lower teams within the Spanish league, honestly, you can't get near them with the ball. So in terms of how they, for us on paper, what it looks like, because Barcelona are very good. Let's be honest, they're very, very good. They've got the top, top players. They've got pretty much the whole of the Spanish national team within their setup. So they are a top team, a bit like how Man City used to dominate here for a while when they had the whole of their, pretty much the Lionesses within their squad. Mm-hmm. So I think their league is very competitive. I just think that it's different to our league. We don't have one team running away within our league because we have two or three that compete because you have three big names. And when you think about the English league and you compare it to the men's and you hear the likes of Man United or Manchester City or Arsenal or Chelsea, that for females wanting to play for those teams is a big draw. In Spain, really, when you think about the names on paper, we only ever used to Real Madrid or Barcelona. Hence, they're the only draws really within that league. But in terms of the whole league and how competitive it is, for me, it's very competitive. And you can ask the players that go there. I think they'll agree that it's competitive.
I agree. I think we talk about history, and when we talk about, because we're talking about male or females, a lot of the time say, back in 1886, this is the oldest club. Back in 1804, they... So if it's all right in the men's game and when it was that type of football, why would the records be any different for the current Barcelona squad? It just doesn't make any sense. If we're taking records from 1805 and what clubs are achieving and the longest ground, and or why wouldn't they take the Spanish? Well done, Barcelona, 50 wins. They are the record holders. Congratulations.
I couldn't agree more. I think, you know, especially because if it were something like basketball where you have, you know, baskets every 30 seconds where you're getting lots and lots of scores. But football is, and I know this is a really simple statement, but it's a really difficult game. It's a difficult game to win because you have to score goals. And even if you packed 11 of your players into the box, you still have to figure out a way to break that down. And, you know, some of the teams do play a really, really, really low block in Spain. And so I think still being able to win, you know, when you're not that motivated, you're playing against teams that aren't as good as you, you know you're going to beat them 9-0, 10-0, you're coming to the game knowing we're so much better than them, you still have to find the motivation. So I totally agree. I think it's an amazing feat. And I guess the only thing that makes it a little bit sad is the fact that, you know, when they won the cup, the Women's Super Cup the previous weekend, they had to pick up their own medals because the Royal Spanish Football Federation refused to do their medal ceremony for them. So I feel like, you know, they've had a high, but actually they're still fighting those 15 players that wrote the letter to the RFEF about the poor treatment from Jorge Vilda, their coach, affecting their mental health. And that's still being ignored. I think that sort of really mars the success of that Barcelona team. And I think it's childish behavior, if I'm honest, from the federation. So that's the only sort of context I would give it, where it feels a bit sad, you know?
Mm-hmm. I agree.
All righty. Well, that will then wrap up our Boots, Balls, and Bras. Thank you guys for not only listening, but participating this week and sending us your fan questions and comments. We always want to hear them. So don't stop those. And we will see you next week, and we've got a special guest coming on, so looking forward to that. Thanks, guys. Have a good week. Bye.
Ciao.
Bye.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.